we just finished a conversation talking about coffee. Chris is boycotting Starbucks, and so he's been almost, would you say, going through withdrawals, Chris?
Yeah, trying to find a good cup of coffee.
Trying to find a good cup of coffee. And we're talking about the fact that you can get these little gizmos that go in these Keurig machines. You can grind your own coffee. Ryan, what kind of coffee do you use for your little deals?
We've got a variety of coffee. There is a couple of roasters here in Minnesota that we enjoy. And then I've got a good buddy who lives in Portland, and every once in a while he'll send me some coffee from Portland. So it's good. And as far as the roast, I mean, we go all over from, espresso roast down to a medium roast. And, I guess the short answer there is we don't really have a house blend at our house. We love trying different stuff at, you know, what's a standard coffee bag, 12 ounces or something like that. We go 12 ounces at a time and then try something else.
There you go. Hey, that works. Hey, you're welcome to the Mead House tonight. We're going to be doing some special stuff. We've got a couple of meads from Aaron that we need to get to. And then, I sent the boys, I think 4 bottles of stuff. 2 of them got something different than the other 2. I believe it was a blueberry, deal that I had sent out. And then I sent a couple bottles of vanilla mead. We'll get to all that here in just a little bit. The Facebook deal, you know where to go. The Mead House, same thing with the website, themeadhouse.com. If you happen to be listening to us from Stitcher or any other place, we live at themeadhouse.com. Ryan Richardson in the house tonight. Aaron Martin back from his, adventures. Mississippi Chris Spencer along for the ride. Jeff Schaus. My name is JD Webb. Jeff, what do we find on Facebook?
Well, actually, I wanted to throw a couple shout-outs to some conversations I had on Facebook. One of our regular listeners here, I shouldn't say regular listeners, one of our newer listeners, Holden Jeff Jumanville, messaged us the other day, and I happened to be watching Facebook at the time and caught that, had a little conversation with him, had a strawberry melmel that was foaming up like crazy. And so we talked a little bit about, you know, skimming off the foam, aerating, things like that, you know, the sanitizers to use. It was just nice to have a quick conversation with one of our listeners here and, you know, share some tips and things like that. Another conversation I had was a guy named, let me find that. Sorry.
That's all right.
The gentleman's name is, Marcel Sescu. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, and I do apologize, but we had a great conversation today about wormwood mead that he had made, and the I believe it was a Romanian basis for it, a wormwood based wine that he had based his recipe on. So I wanted to throw him a shout out. You can find that whole conversation on the Mead Group on Facebook. Yeah, that was, I think that was about it for this week that I had.
Cool. Very good. And, I want to throw a shout out to John Record for, I'm not quite sure. Now, I apologize, John, if you're going to listen to the show, but I have no idea how I met you, where I met you. I may have been through one of the, Mead groups, might even been the show for all I know. But I had put a picture up. I've been working on my Keezer thing. Chris helping me build a tower for it and everything. In the meantime, I kind of jury rigged my old tower back up on my wooden decking, and somewhere along the line, I made the comment of, I know what it was. I'm missing a tap handle on one of the three taps on the tower. And I think somebody had seen the picture that I had put up. Anyway, John Records, you know, sees this picture and then says, hey, I've got some antlers that you might be interested in. So he was kind enough to mail me an antler, a deer antler. It's just a little two-pronger. And I got it all trimmed up and drilled out, got the insert in it, and it's hanging out now on top of my Perlick 650SS faucet. So thanks to John Record for the antler, and he says, hey, if it looked good, he's going to send me the other side. So he's got the pair that came off the same deer, so that'll be pretty cool. We're going to kind of forego the what are we drinking tonight, because obviously we've got several meads that we're going to be tasting. I don't know, somebody doing the dishes? I'm getting a lot of
background. No, sorry, that was...
Popping the tops on bottles, are you?
Yeah, setting up my plate here for tasting.
Looking for the church key? Anyway, okay, so we got that settled down. Hey, like I said, we're going to forego the whole what are we drinking thing here tonight, because we're all drinking something from one another. And I thought we'd start off, guys, with Aaron. We left off, I think, help me out here, because I've got two pages of notes. I think we started with the crystal, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
And then we had the Calypso and the Chinook left to do. And Aaron, I don't know which, which one followed which in order?
You know, I think what I had recommended was going from the Crystal to the Chinook to the Calypso. The only reason being that's in increasing levels of alpha acid, so increasing levels of bitterness.
Okay. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, do we want to hit on the Chinook next then?
I might as well.
Absolutely.
Ryan, go ahead and start it off.
So I just sampled it moments ago. So with this one, it was in extremely pale straw color. Just had the faintest, you know, bit of color. And, you know, it's, again, I say straw, it might even be just that, you know, very, very hint of gold, you know, in there. It was brilliantly clear. It had nice carbonation and did maintain a very, very low head through my sampling. And it had quickly receding legs. So it did have some legs on it, but they, you know, as opposed to just immediately falling back into the glass, but they did retreat quickly. The aroma for me was all fruit, lemon and grapefruit dominated. And then I had, hints of mango and peach as well. I mentioned it was an extremely pleasant aroma. It reminded me of some commercial hopped meads that I had. It was very, very pleasant. As far as the flavor, it was in mouthfeel. It was very light bodied. It had very, very well balanced of sweetness, tannin, and alcohol. It was I thought very, very well balanced. No alcohol heat at all. It was not cloyingly sweet, but it didn't seem bone dry as well either. I got the faintest bit of vanilla on the tongue, and it had a mild bitter aftertaste, but not to an unpleasant sense at all, which can sometimes happen when if there's not a lot of sweetness to balance that bitterness. My overall impressions, I said it was extreme. It was very, very drinkable, and it was. I said it was an excellent mead. I really enjoyed this one. It really reminded me of some commercial hop meads, and very, very well done, Aaron. Excellent. And I'll say that I'm going to hold off on the rankings. I think that maybe what we should do is, after we've all gone through Calypso, you know, to finish out the three, then maybe we all give our ranks at the end and not spoil the takeaway. But again, what my only question here was Aaron, I think you said that this is, I guess, let me ask you two questions. What is the alcohol content on this one, and what it was the final gravity?
Oh boy, good question. So all of these finished like pretty much bone dry in the, you know, the 100 range. As far as the alcohol content, so these started up at 19 bricks. And I'm trying to remember what that would correlate to. I'm doing a quick Google search here to see what that would correlate to in terms of alcohol or potential alcohol. They're up there, though.
I believe you said last time the other one was like close to maybe 10%.
Correct. Yeah. So this 19 bricks would lead to about 10.8% ABV.
Oh, yeah. Good. So for a 10% mead, or a 10% beverage, this is what I call the danger zone. And I say that because I could drink this and not realize that it's 10%. And then, you know, a six pack into these things, you're in a little bit of trouble.
you'll be struggling at that point.
Yeah, but that's how drinkable it was to me. It was an extremely drinkable mead, and it was for it to come out as balanced as I thought it, you know, as I perceived it to be. At a bone dry gravity, I mean that's difficult to do. It reminds me a little bit of our old friend Ricky, who Valkyrie's Choice is a traditional mead at 0.996 final gravity, and it doesn't seem like it doesn't come off as bone dry. It's got this perceived explosion of flavor happening. This one was a very well done mead.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. And, you know, it's interesting to me just, and I agree, let's hold off on the rankings maybe until we all have the chance to go through the whole flight of all three of them. What was interesting to me is how with these three small 1 gallon batches, just the difference in carbonation levels that I had had. I think the crystal one, for whatever reason, just didn't quite reach that same level of carbonation as the other two. You know, maybe chalk it up to just a little bit of variation in processing from one batch to the other. So that was very interesting to me. And it's just also interesting how you can hold all of the other factors the same and just swap out one ingredient in the hop here and really have a vastly different end product, at least from the crystal to the Chinook. But thank you for the feedback. That's it's fascinating to hear your thoughts on that.
Were you drinking it ice cold, Ryan, or room temperature? I don't remember what you're saying.
Yeah, so sure. I was drinking it at 62 degrees out of a whiskey nosing glass.
Okay. Jeff, why don't you go next?
Sure, okay. So, like Ryan was saying, it's a very clear straw color. There was a very nice level of carbonation on this one. It had a good fizz to it the entire time. Even after I sat it down for like 20 minutes to finish dinner, I came back to it and it was still nice and bubbly. As far as the bouquet or the aroma, I got a very light honey character to it that was pleasant. The aroma to me was really, really reminiscent of pears more than anything else. I could maybe see a little bit of peach in there. And, I also got kind of just a hint of it. It vaguely reminded me of like that balsam fir, scent that you smell around the holidays sometime. The fruit was a lot stronger than the fir though. As far as the flavor goes, yeah, again, it was really dry, but there was that wonderful perception of sweetness coming from the hops that, that really made it work. It was bitter, but not like an IPA, like hop crazy, style. It complemented the honey flavor really nicely, I thought, and really rounded it out. Comparing it to the crystal beforehand, I thought this one actually felt like it had a lot more body to it, per se. It felt a little bit fuller in the mouth, and that might have been the bitterness from the hops coming through more than anything else. The balance, like Ryan said, was really, really nice. I got kind of that peach and pear flavor coming through in fruit flavor terms. And the aftertaste kind of reminded me vaguely of black licorice. Not in the heavy sense, but just in that kind of fading aftertaste sense. Overall, this was really drinkable. I think I really enjoyed this one, more than the crystal. And, like Ryan said, this is a really, dangerous brew, because this should not be 10%. This drinks like it's 4%. And I could slam three of these and find myself in a lot of trouble.
Oh, it's just funny too. You know, I was shooting for what I was describing as a session mead and lower ABV. And I guess to me, you know, 19 bricks, a starting gravity of 1.0785 is lower in terms of a starting gravity compared to most of the meads I've made. But when you put that into perspective compared to a lot of beers and things like that, like that's got a little bit of a boozy kick to it. So totally agree. Yeah. Gotta be careful with these.
Mississippi.
Yeah.
Did you, let
me start by saying to our listeners that, we spent almost the entire show last time doing this evaluation, and there's actually a purpose behind it. I don't know if we described it or explained it, but we were doing this so that you could get an idea if you wanted to use hops. You know, you could use this feedback to know what to use and how much. So that was the purpose of all this live on air.
Yeah, and you know, and maybe even to discover your own tasting, your own process. Because I've actually learned a lot from the three of you, because you know how my tastings go. But I've actually learned quite a bit from you guys, just listening to you describe. So I think there's something to that as well.
Okay, on this one, comparing it with the crystal one that we did first, this has got a lot more going on, I think. It's in the aroma. The first thing I get is a perfumed citrus character. It comes on with a real strong perfume. I think part of that's probably from the honey. Part of it's from the hops. It's got a very grapefruity aroma, just like the other one did, only this one's a little bit sharper than the other one. As far as the taste, well, this, first of all, this one's got a lot more carbonation than the other one. So the first thing I get is this acidic bite, which is more alpha acids, more carbonation, plus the fact that it's made with, I believe you said this was basswood honey, correct?
That is correct.
Yep. It follows through right at the beginning with the perfume taste, sort of a perfumed, like a, maybe a grapefruit, zest. Then it goes sort of to the grapefruit pulp. But it's got this bite to it. And, I think when we talk about making a mead that's balanced, I think you are skirting the edge here. This is like as far as you can go for my particular taste with acidity and bitterness, balanced with no sweetness. I think if the acidity increased or the bitterness increased any more past this, you would need residual sweetness, to keep this in balance. But this is in balance. It's a good mead. It reminds me a lot of some of the ones that Ricky sent us. There's even, I'm picking up just a little bit of ginger, like right on the very end. It's very faint, but it's there. And also there's a certain earthiness to this particular one. I don't really get the balsam or the fir or anything. I think it may, we may be tasting the same thing that Jeff described, only it's, I'm describing it as an earthy taste, right on the very end, sort of the aftertaste. And there's no alcohol at all. I mean, it's totally hidden, which, like everyone else said, it makes it very dangerous because, I mean, you just don't know it's there. Now, this seems to have more body to it than the other one. That may be due in part to the carbonation. I don't know. But, you know, to be bone dry, it's not really what I consider extremely light-bodied at all. It's got some mouthfeel to it, which I like. This mead here, I think, is an example of good mead making practice. This is what comes out when you do everything correct. This is good mead. There's nothing wrong with this at all. This is a good job.
Awesome. You know, it's interesting hearing your discussion and points about balance and what residual sweetness would do to these. And, you know, unlike you guys, I had the opportunity to try these meads after, you know, primary fermentation and even during some of the fermentation when there still was some residual sweetness there. And I remember thinking at the time just how delicious it was with, you know, that honey sweetness to balance out the hop flavor. And I was debating about stabilizing at that point in time to maintain that and not lose that sweet because it was just so wonderful. I ended up taking them dry so that I'd be able to bottle condition. But, you know, I think you're onto something there, Chris. I think having the higher level of sweetness in this style of mead definitely works. And, you know, I think if there's one takeaway that I'm having with these experiments and these three batches is I've really enjoyed the dry hopped meads quite a bit. This is definitely something that I'll be reproducing again. Somewhere down the road, if I get to the point where I get a kegging system, I really like the carbonation in these. I think it gives it a little bit more of a beer-like quality with the hops that I really enjoy. And having a kegging system would almost allow you to stabilize and then force carb it, and you kind of get the best of both worlds that way. So anyways, appreciate the feedback.
Yeah, I'd like to say two more things. First of all, this is in balance. It is most definitely in balance. And I think what's really saving the day here is the perceived sweetness that's here, which
yes,
that's good honey selection, and it's good mead making practice that brings that out. But it definitely is in balance. You're skirting the edge, whereas if you went a little bit more acidic or bitter, you would need some sweetness, but this is in good balance. Another thing too, that bite that I'm talking about, that may be brought on by the increased level of carbonation. So I don't know about you guys, but mine was extremely carbonated. So maybe that's a takeaway lesson here when you're thinking about carbonating a mead and you're thinking about this whole balance issue, maybe you need to take your carbonation level into account as well and realize that you're going to get a certain carbonic bite from the carbonation. So take that into account when you're making these things.
This is, you know, I'm gonna start out a little bit differently. I'm gonna go right down to the food category. This is a garlic, rosemary chicken with roasted red potatoes, parsley, and butter, or a baked halibut with mango salsa, roast parsnips, and carrots. I'll tell you what, Aaron, this shit is good. And you know how simple it is for me to establish whether something's good or not. I mean, I take my first sip of this, and I'll tell you what, give me another bottle. I don't know where to start, honestly. This is the second time that you have just impressed the hell out of me with one of your offerings. The first one, of course, was that little braggot thing that you sent here a while back. I'm digging this. This is exactly the top of the line right here. Now, as far as the color, I mean, I go along with the rest of the guys, kind of a straw colored. I'd call it a silver gold. It's got kind of a shimmer to it, you know, fantastically clear. The aroma I get, I'm going to go a little bit different road than these other three guys. I get kind of a green leaf thing, like not necessarily grass, but something green, some spring day after mowing the lawn kind of thing, but not necessarily grass. Perhaps it's the hops that I'm smelling. I do get the citrus, the mild citrus thing. I can't pick it out whether it's a lemon or a grapefruit or what. But that's on the aroma side. But I can narrow it down when I get to the taste. I do get kind of a grapefruity flavor there, just a tad, not a whole lot. Mildly sweet. I mean, and you talk about, I think Chris is talking about perceived sweetness. This is absolutely perfect. You get that little bit of sweetness on the tongue, and then it goes away nicely. It doesn't leave you with a mouthful of sugar like some of these other meads out here. This is very nicely carved. I appreciate carbonation in this. Perhaps I tend to go for the more carb type stuff, the higher carb. What would you call it, Chris? A higher altitude, or what the hell they call that? Atmosphere?
More volumes of CO2.
More volume, yeah. I don't get it quite as scientific as the other four guys sitting around the table here, but hey. I get this, the mouthfeel is like, I mean, it's perfect. I mean, everything about this thing is just perfect. It's nice and dry, which makes it really good, for like a dinner wine or a dinner mead, with white meat, pork even, chicken dinner, like I said, you know, baked halibut or a whitefish of some kind. Aaron, you impressed the hell out of me with this. This is just absolutely the best thing you have ever made, as far as I've tasted.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you guys so much for the feedback, and just tickled to hear your thoughts. It is interesting to me, between Jeff and JD, you know, Jeff, you talked about the balsam fir. JD, you touched a little bit on like a green leaf. Now, you described it more as maybe grassy, or, you know, fresh mowed grass type of an aroma or flavor. But that is kind of the basis of this hop, the Chinook. You know, when I selected this hop, I tried to select one that would be distinctly different than the Crystal and the Calypso. And this is one that is described as being very piney, very resiny. You know, it's interesting that a couple of you guys picked up on that. Now, I think, as I have tasted it, and all of these, maybe part of it is the basswood honey that I used. But I think one of the themes that I'm hearing is from both of these meads that we've tried so far are notes of grapefruit and lemon and citrus aroma and flavor. And again, you know, maybe chalk some of that up to the honey, maybe chalk some of that up to just the combination of hops and honey together. Maybe that's just part of the flavor combination you get there. But yeah, definitely, it's interesting to hear your thoughts and appreciate the feedback here.
I'm not sure exactly which one I agree with more, but I think you're on the right track with both of those suppositions, that it's either the combination of the basswood and the hops, or maybe something just about hops and honey in general that kind of brings out the citrusy and acidity of it. And yeah, I've done this with a more plain Jane honey as opposed to the basswood, and I don't recall getting a lot of citrus flavor, but I also used a noble hop that has a lot less bitterness than most commercially available. So my expertise in this area is a little limited too. It could easily shake out either way.
I think.
I have to add that whenever I taste a dry carbonated mead, especially a session mead or something, below 12% ABV, I always tend to get grapefruit. And it almost doesn't matter what kind of honey it is. I pick up grapefruit for some reason in these kinds of meads. So take that into account when you're tallying the votes.
you know, Jeff was talking about, you know, the hops and honey. In a culinary world, you know, sweet and savory go along together very nicely in most conditions. And I got to agree with you, Jeff. I think hops and honey go together very well, because I think the hops bring out something in the honey as much as savory spices and herbs bring out the sweetness in some dishes as well, or at least kind of highlight it. But awesome job, Aaron. Which one is next?
So I think
Calypso.
The third and final one, that's right.
I'll start this one off, since I already drank mine a couple of weeks ago, but I did take some notes. I'll quickly go through them here. The color I got, it was kind of a lightly foggy color. Not as clear as the other two that we've covered. It seemed to have had some pretty decent legs on it too, as I recall. Nicely carved, although this one here is much more carved than the Calypso, as I recall. And the aroma, I got kind of a very mild sweetness in the aroma. Nice honey expression. Almost reminded me of a cut hay field for some reason. I don't know if that's because of the Calypso hops or where that's coming from. And the flavor, I don't know what it is about wood, but I get this pine, kind of a piney flavor, black pepper, some kind of green apple, very mild bitterness, a mild citrus flavor. I can't pick out the citrus. I don't know whether it's grapefruit or lemon. Maybe along the lines, Chris talking about the carbonation and whatnot seems to bring out this grapefruity type thing, and it might be that. It has it's got a very clean, refreshing aftertaste. It's dry, again nicely carved, and for me it tasted like a carbonated Pinot Grigio. Maybe a little bit too acidy, but I like the dryness. It was almost wine-like with a little carbonation, kind of a peppery finish, and it sticks around for a while. So those are my notes on this particular one. Anybody awesome. Else? Throw it across the table. Jeff? Is Jeff here? Did we lose Jeff?
Sorry, I was on mute.
Oh.
So yeah, as far as appearance goes, let's see here. It has a little bit of a haze to it. It's not a big deal to me, but it's not as clear as the Chinook was. As far as legs go, I mean, I'm not really counting legs or expecting much of a more of a session meat. This one tends to sheet off the glass for me, but I'm not expecting, you know, huge fat legs like a nice red wine or something like that. Carbonation level, really nice. It has a good amount of fizz, even though I opened this bottle at the start of the show, so it's been open at least an hour, sitting in my glass, and it's still bubbling away. As far as the aroma goes, there's a light honey character to it that's very pleasant, and I'm also getting kind of a light pineapple flavor or smell to it. The more I smell it, I could even call this a mango flavor, but it's a very tropical fruit kind of a flavor. There's a little bit of a citrus that makes me go pineapple more than mango. And then when I taste it, let's see here. So I get kind of a green apple over the mid palate. The perceived sweetness and balance isn't quite as strong as it was with the Chinook. It's still there. I still kind of taste a little bit of sweetness, but it's a very citrusy flavor as opposed to a kind of a sweet and bitter flavor. The aftertaste has a lingering kind of a lemon or a grapefruit flavor, which is pleasant. Don't get me wrong. It just doesn't have that quite level of balance that the Chinook had. Overall impression, I still really like the hop and honey character to this. Like the last two of yours that I've sampled, this is a very easy drinker. It should not be 10%. It's going to get me in trouble because this is the second one I've had tonight. it's really good. I could see, especially with the citrus flavors in this one that are really strongly highlighted, this being a nice, refreshing, like something to sit around picnic table on a summer evening and just chat and have a good time with friends with. It's a really nice brew. There's an additional flavor that I'm just having a little bit of a trouble putting a flavor on. I can't quite pinpoint it. It's a little bit fruity and a little bit not quite piney, but along that bitter spectrum. I just can't place it.
It's interesting. So when we're done reviewing this one, I have to read to you guys the description of this hop from the Northern Brewer website. when I first read this, it was just so intriguing of a description to me that, like, I absolutely just had to select this hop and include it in the experiment. And Jeff, just hearing your descriptions there, I mean, you're touching on some of the descriptors that they've got on the website, but I'll save that maybe for at the end.
Sure, play.
The review.
And Ryan, what'd you think?
Yeah, so just a couple more questions to refresh my memory, Aaron. What was your process of bottle carbonating? Was that you had put the primary sugar in, or the priming sugar into the 1 gallon carboy that you had, and then just racked it off, filled up the bottles from that?
No. So what I did, basically the same procedure I use with bottle conditioning beer, I think is at about a pint of water that I boil and add in, I forget exactly how, it's like a packet of priming sugar.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I should have clarified. So you use about 5 ounces for 5 gallons. So maybe an ounce or so of priming sugar into a few ounces of water and put that into the 1 gallon carboy.
So put that into...
You simmered it.
Exactly, yeah. Brought that to a boil, put that into the bottling bucket, then racked from the 1 gallon carboy on top of that, and then from into the bottling bucket, and then from the bottling bucket into the bottles.
Okay. So yep. a very, very standard bottle conditioning procedure. The reason I ask is that there is so much, there's such a wide spectrum between individual bottles that we've received of the same style. Some being more cloudy, some being more brilliantly clear, some having a little more body to them, which leads me to believe they might have been closer to the Trub or whatnot. But that's the reason I ask you, is that it's, and this is no different. When you hear my notes, it's vastly different from what we've heard so far. And again, I should say there are other things that do affect aroma and taste, and temperature is a big one. And then also there have been some studies that are tests, I should say, not a true study, but tests that show that the type of vessel that you're drinking from does affect flavor and aroma. So again, I am drinking it, or I past tense now, I had it at 62 degrees, and I was using a whiskey nosing glass, which is excellent for concentrating that aroma and that flavor a little bit more. And before I go on, I also should specify that I am giving you the Ryan feedback as a layperson, you know, as just Ryan would give feedback. I am not trying to judge this as if I were a BJCP competition judge. A lot of this is going to be some subjectiveness to me, and you have one today, you have one tomorrow. It's the same thing, but in some ways you're different, and that you're perceiving things to be different. But enough about that. Let's let's get into this. And I'm gonna go linearly here, north to south down the sheet. It again was very, very light on color. I mean, it was borderline on clear with just a hint of straw or gold. I mean, I don't know if that matters anymore when you get that near to that clear. It was, again, absolutely crystal clear. I mean, if you had this on your windshield, it wouldn't even impair your driving. I mean, that's how clear it was. I should say, if your windshield was made out of it. Extremely light carbonation. I mean, the carbonation went away within seconds of me pouring it. It just, I mean, it went flat. No head at all. No legs at all. It gave the appearance of being, you know, a very light liquid. On the bouquet and the aroma, again, very, very light overall. There was a tiny bit of earthiness. I can't pinpoint it as pine or resin. Just extremely light, faint. I mean, you've got to try to find the aroma in it. If I had to go somewhere, I would go towards that earthiness. The flavor, extremely dry. Very little sweetness, very little bitterness. The flavor fell away immediately. I mean, while you're drinking it, the flavor is receding. And I mean, it was like a race. You know, I'm drinking it, trying to see what it tastes like, but that flavor is just disappearing as I'm drinking it. And I don't mean this as a criticism, so please don't take it that way. But it reminded me of an American adjunct lager. And what I mean by that is those were brewed to be extremely clean, extremely light beers. And in a way, this is the to me, a little bit of the equivalent, you know, of being very light, very clean, not a lot of character, and just, you know, they're just checking the box on what it needs to be. My overall impression of this is that, I mean, again, no heat, obviously, of the alcohol, no real mouthfeel, a tannin, anything like that. My overall impression is this was very balanced and very pleasant for a very, very light mead. This is what my note says crushable. And I mean, like, crushable. Like, you could, if you had a case of cans of this, you could go to the beach and crush them and you wouldn't feel full. You wouldn't feel, you know, bloated. You'd be drunk, but you know, they're easy. Anybody in the world would drink these because it's so light. I mean, like I said, it's like an American adjunct lager of hot mead. It's not offensive. It's not controversial. It's made to be crushed. And so, you know, you get a lot of points for being able to make a mead that light without a glaring flaw. And again, I think, you know, someone listening to this might say, well, Ryan, you know, you're not saying a lot of good things about it. Au contraire. The lighter you make a mead, the more a flaw is going to come through. And so this is an extremely light mead without any flaws that I found. And so again, it was to me, you know, I'll say it one more time. The best definition I can give you is crushable. And then I'll, you know, just kind of like we've been doing here. Once Chris gets through his, we'll come back around and we'll do our ordering of the three.
Well, let's find out what Chris thinks about it.
Well, I'm going to have an entirely different opinion than Ryan had on this one. As far as the body is concerned, to me, this is the heaviest bodied of all of them. that's the impression that I'm getting. It is probably the most cloudy of the three, I think. It comes in second place in carbonation level. It seems like the carbonation in this went away faster than the Chinook, for sure. But it hung around more, and there was initially more than the Crystal. Now, with the aroma on this one, I'm getting more honey than I did on the other two. But I'm also getting an equal amount of hop aroma. If you can imagine opening a package of hops and holding it side by side with a jar of honey, that's what this reminds me of. There is that grapefruit quality there, but it's much more subdued in this one. It's not jumping out at me like it did in the other two. As far as the taste is concerned, I'm getting the same thing in the taste that I am the aroma. It's like a perfect blend of hops and honey. All the other qualities are there. There's a certain earthiness to it. There's a certain floral, kind of a citrusy note, but it's all of those little things are more subdued in this one. And it seems to me, my perception is that the body is heaviest on this one as compared to the other two. But that's a good thing because these hops are coming through a lot more to me, a lot more bitterness. Maybe not quite as much acidic bite. Now, here we go. Is that carbonation level or is that something else? But, I think if you asked judges or if you asked the general population, 99% of them are going to go with one of the first two. I'm going to have to probably say my overall impression, this one to me is my favorite of the three, simply because I'm getting more honey. And when I drink mead, I want to get honey. And I'm getting more honey out of this one than any of the other two. This, to me, is what a hopped mead should taste like. This is the one I would buy. Now, if you want me to start off with ranking, this is my number one favorite. The Chinook's my number two, and the Crystal's my number three.
Interesting.
Interesting, yeah.
So, and I want to hear the other rankings as well. Before we jump into that, I have to read this to you guys because on some level, this makes me laugh. It's like a commercial or something for the Calypso Hop. So this is the description of Calypso Hop pellets from the Northern Brewer website. Oh, how Calypso captivates her audience. Gorgeous, soft floral aroma lands with an overt kick of dried apple, pear, and citrus. Described as unlike any other hop that has come before it, Calypso offers brilliant flavor and aroma, covering a wide spectrum of specific descriptors. Lemons, cherry blossoms, black pepper, bitter orange, mint, hints of tropical fruit, and sappy pronounced pear. I remember reading that and my mind was made up. Like, that is going in the experiment. It just sounded so interesting. And I think some of those descriptors I definitely heard through the group as you guys were going through with the descriptions. But thank you all so much for your feedback on these three meads, and it's really been fascinating and enjoyable to hear everybody's thoughts on these. So, Chris, you actually had the same rankings that I did with the Calypso number one, Chinook number two, and Crystal three. Definitely interested to hear the rest of the group's rankings as well.
I had Calypso and Chinook reversed. I can't get over this Chinook, dude. I mean, I'm looking around for some more bottles of it. I can't, this stuff is too good. The Calypso I had is number two. That's another one that I'd absolutely drink with dinner. Didn't particularly care for the Crystal. That was my number three. And I'll turn it over to Jeff.
My lineup is pretty much the same as JD's. Chinook, hands down, was the better of the three to me. I appreciated the body. I appreciated the balance. It was just spot on to me as far as what I look for in a hoppy mead. The carbonation was just right. It really hit the spot. I'm a little bit closer on Crystal versus the Calypso. Calypso edged it out just because it had a little bit more interest as far as different flavors going on than I got out of the Crystal, which was very floral, which wasn't bad, but just wasn't as interesting to me as an experiential thing.
And Ryan? Wake up, Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm awake. You know, before I say my ranking, I just, again, I want to stress the wide spectrum that we've experienced between some of the same bottles and what we've talked about. And while some of that, I believe, is chalked up to individual differences, I believe that also some of this is due to differences inside of that carboy or inside of that of the of an individual batch. I know that I've had beers, you know, that, you know, when I bottle my beers, I bottle them, you know, front to back, and I can tell you which, you know, was the first ones out of the carboy and which ones are the last ones out of the carboy. And you do find some slight variables between them, between the ones that you bottled first and you bottled last, and you know, were they at the top of the carboy or the bottom of the carboy? So I think we're experiencing a little bit of that too. And it probably more pronounced in a 1 gallon batch when, you know, there only are a few bottles that you're getting. But moving on from that, my Chinook was my number one, Calypso was my number two, and Crystal was my number three. I, you know, again, speaking as Ryan, not trying to say I'm a grandmaster judge or anything, was that I Crystal I didn't really care for. I don't believe I finished the bottle of Crystal. But I really enjoyed both Chinook and Calypso. And what we also learned, and this is something that Chris loves to stress, rightfully so, is what you can learn from these. And now, again, my Calypso was extremely different than Chris's Calypso. But what I would learn from this is if I needed to bring these qualities that this Calypso brings to a Braggot or to a Metheglin or something like that, that's what I can lean on to bring it. You know, like I said, Calypso is great on its own, but I think that you've also learned the qualities, and same with Chinook, that the qualities that it can bring when you layer it in to a certain style of Braggot or to a certain Metheglin or something, maybe even a, you know, the fruit and spiced mead, you know, that you want to make, on how you can layer these flavors in and start to know what they're going to contribute to that batch. So it was a wonderful experiment, and a big thank you to Aaron. You did a good job.
Yeah, and let me add something also, because I had the first two reversed from everyone else. If I were a professional mead maker and I had these three meads in front of me and I wanted to decide, okay, which one am I going to release to the public, I would release the Chinook. I would agree with everyone else. It was the most well-balanced and probably the most drinkable of the three. But I give my ranking based on just my personal preference. And I seldom go with the flow. especially when it comes to taste. So that's why I ranked it second rather than first. But I do agree with everyone else. I think it is the most balanced and the most drinkable. Just I like the qualities of the Calypso better.
Yeah.
Now, before we move on, I've got another shout out I need to make real quick to one of our fellow residents here, and that's JD, because although I've tasted these hot meads, I'm currently drinking this blueberry sizer that JD sent. Now, JD, is this the one off of my recipe that you posted?
Yep.
Okay.
It's just apple juice and blueberries. That's mm-hmm. it.
Well,
I don't know if that was, well, come to think, I honestly, Chris, I couldn't tell you. It's just apple juice and blueberries, dude. One can of mm-hmm. apple juice concentrate. So,
well,
called the blueberry.
Yeah, it is. It's the same one you had, Brian. And I think it is based off yours.
That's the one I called the blueberry pie.
Yeah, and that's a good description. There's a lot of interesting things going on here. When it comes to making a blueberry sizer, you knock the ball out of the park. And I would like to take some credit for sure. the fact that it was my recipe, but since we don't know if it was or not, then
no, I'll tell you exactly what the recipe is. This is 2 gallons of apple juice, 0.3 pounds of frozen blueberries that were thawed out, 1 can of apple juice concentrate. The Tosna protocol was followed. I'm not going to go through all the feedings and everything, but that's basically it. I mean, it started out at 1.120. It finished off at, I want to say, like 1.016. And I don't recall what that is as far as the alcohol. I didn't write the ABV down. But, that's it. I mean, it's 14%.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
again,
71B.
Once again, let me just go through this really quickly. I get new grape on the aroma. If you know what a new grape soda smells like, this is what it's new grape mixed with a little bit of white wine and fruity. Just generally fruity. There's no, it's just like a berry fruitiness. But the flavor is exactly what it is. It's blueberry, it's sizer, it's honey. There is a distinct aroma of honey in the glass, especially if you don't swirl the glass. If you just let it sit still and take a deep breath, you really get the honey supporting everything. Good mouthfeel. The acidity is not over the top. Once again, this is in balance. I would probably finish it maybe a little bit sweeter, but then again, this is also fairly young, I'm guessing.
Yeah, wow.
So it's going to meld and blend together and mellow out even more over time.
Actually, but, no, November.
Yeah, so it's very young for
a
sizer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you've got that, you know, we come back to that whole thing about apples need aging no matter what, and I haven't found a way around that yet. So,
yeah.
But, I mean, there's even a nutty, bready character in there somewhere, and I have no clue where that's coming from, but that bready character blends with the blueberries, and it just screams blueberry pie. And it's not overly perceived sweetness, but it's enough. The body is just where I like it. It's not light. It's not too heavy. Ryan was talking about just crushing something. This is where I would get in trouble here, because I'd crush this. Wow. I'd drink this like a soda on a hot day, and I'd be drunk off my ass.
Damn, dude, I'm sitting on the edge of my chair. I can't believe this. Damn.
This is oh, what I like when I think about fruit in a mead. This is where it's at, you know. And even though I would finish it a little bit sweeter, I'd probably ruin it for most people by doing that. Most people wouldn't want it any sweeter than this. That's where I go astray from most people.
I was worried about blueberries and apples because, I mean, you know, when you go to the store, I get so sick and tired. You walk down the juice aisle, okay, and I know you guys have seen this, but every freaking juice on the shelf is something with apple juice or cranberry juice. It's either cranberry this or that or apple juice this or that. I mean, every freaking juice on the shelf. So I thought, well, what the hell? I love blueberries and I like apple juice. So, Krista, I mean, this is patterned after your recipe. So yeah, you get the credit for that.
It's not exactly the recipe I posted, because the one I posted, it had a little bit higher starting gravity, I believe, and it had. Yeah. It had some lees aging involved, which would have been, and it was D47, so it would have been, it would have been aged on the lees. You would get a little bit, you'd get a little bit of quality from it, but you know what? I'm not going to sit here and say that it would be better either way. I mean, this is good. I mean, you've got the fruit coming through, the apple is not coming through quite as much as it should, but it's because it's so young.
Yeah.
You knocked the ball out of the park. Aaron's got the session needs nailed down. You've got this one nailed for sure. And wow. I have not tried your orange yet. So that's still to come. And I don't think I'm going to be able to do it tonight. After drinking this.
No, I think Jeff will probably have to prop you up over there at the end of the table. But wow, thank you. That's amazing. Totally amazing. Did anybody else get the, I don't remember who I sent what to. Might have been Aaron that got the other blueberry. I don't remember.
You know, I have tried so far the BB1 and the Graph, and I do have some notes that I took down. I actually drank both of these on, what was it, Saturday?
I think we've already done the Graph. We did the Graph, I think it was last week. Go ahead and talk about the Graph. Let me know what you thought about the Graph.
All right.
I don't think you were here, right, guys?
Aaron wasn't here. We did both the BB1 and the Graph last week.
Okay. So, all right. So tell me what you thought about both of them.
All right. Well, let me do this in the order that I drank them, which was the BB1 and then the Graph. So BB1, I'll just kind of go down the sheet in order as well. So starting with the appearance, it poured a very, very dark brown, bordering on black. It was very thick and reminded me of some of the like imperial stouts or imperial porters that I've had. One that comes to mind, if you guys have ever had that old Rasputin Russian stout.
I've got it. Yeah. Yep. I got a six pack. Absolutely. Yep. You're right.
Kind of reminded me of that just in appearance. Now it was a little bit lower on the carbonation level. After pouring it kind of left a ring around the edge of my glass that was formed by the bubbles there. In terms of the clarity, it was kind of hard to tell just because it was so dark, but it didn't look overly cloudy by any means, and then definitely had some pretty substantial legs that clinged to the edge of the glass and just kind of laced and traced its way down as I was drinking it. From a bouquet and aroma perspective, I mean, the first thing that hit me was that distinct smell of bourbon. You know, it's just, it blasted me right in the face, the bourbon smell. Okay. But behind that, I definitely got some, like, notes of toffee, caramel. I didn't get much of a honey character coming through in the fragrance. And there was even a little bit of, like, milk chocolate in the aroma as well. It was interesting. I actually sampled this with my wife as well, and I didn't really pick up on this as much, but she said that she noted like a grassy and roasty type of a smell as well. So at that point I was intrigued and took my first sip, and the first thing, I mean, this was just a real big and boozy braggot to me, you know, definitely a very strong bourbon flavor that stuck around and hung on my palate. And there were just so many robust and complex flavors going on in this. I wrote down some other notes of like raisin and vanilla, almost like an oatmeal raisin cookie kind of a flavor going on. Very complex, extremely, extremely smooth. And in terms of the aftertaste, that's where I started to pick up some of the oakiness that kind of hooked back in. I even perceived a little bit of saltiness, which I sometimes will pick up like a little bit of a salty flavor in traditional meads. So I wondered if some of that might have come from the honey that you added. I think in reading the email notes that you had sent out on this, was it about 6 pounds of honey that you added to this batch?
Yeah, 6 pounds of honey.
Okay. Yeah, so just going through some of my notes, you know, I'm talking about the oatmeal raisin cookie, even a little bit of like a vanilla woody type of a flavor as well. Overall impressions, I mean, this was a very rich and full-bodied braggot. And, you know, I think earlier, was it Ryan was talking about how from day to day we change, our perceptions change, the circumstances in which we're drinking something, you know, that changes. And for me, I had just gotten home from running errands. It was in the 30s that day. It was raining outside. And, you know, this was just a very delightful and complex beer that warmed me up after being kind of cold from being outside in the rain. You know, coming in and drinking this beer, it warmed me up. This was phenomenal, JD. It really knocked my socks off. And thank you. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you. And, you know, you're right in line with the rest of the guys that tried it and talked about it here. What I think it was last week. So yeah, you're right on top of it. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. You don't know how much that means to me to have somebody talk positively about my stuff. But again, thank you very much. My God.
Well, thank you for sending it. It knocked my socks off. That was awesome.
Well, you know what all this tells me? I mean, you know, when you, and again, I mean, I said this last week. I mean, you can give this stuff to your friends and relatives, but, I mean, they're not going to, you know, most of the people I give it to around here, they're going to tell me good things because they just want some more. It's free booze, you know, but when you give it to people that you really, I mean, I know you guys, but I don't know you kind of thing. And I know that I'm going to get an honest opinion from you. And, that means more to me. And I really appreciate it. It makes me feel good that my stuff is being enjoyed by, you know, four guys, across the country. And that means a lot. And I don't know if it was you. Well, yeah, you got the other blueberry, right?
You know,
did you get the blueberry, or who did I sell the other blueberry to? Two of you got a blueberry, and two of you got the vanilla mead. Who got the vanilla mead? Ryan, I think.
Yep, and I got a vanilla.
And I think Jeff got the other vanilla. So yeah, so I think Aaron got the other blueberry. So we can
Is
save that.
Okay.
Yeah, save that for another day.
I will. And does the blueberry, does that have a black cap on there?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. I got the other blueberry. Oh, awesome.
Now you had the graft. Were you going to say something about the graft? Because I want to hear what you got to say about it.
Oh, yeah. The graft. Yeah. What were your notes on the graft?
I was listening to these other guys tasting it and I was tasting it at the same time, and it's slightly different than mine. Mine's got more of a caramel smoothness to it than JD's, although we used exactly the same recipe. We did everything identical.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if it's because mine's a couple of months ahead of yours or what, but
right.
I want to hear what Aaron's got to say about it.
Absolutely. So after warming myself up with the bourbon barrel Braggot, I moved on to the Graff, and in terms of the appearance, it poured kind of a deep copper color, almost like a burnt orange type of a color. Had a little bit of a haze to it, almost like a mulled cider I had written down here. Slight to moderate carbonation level, and similar to the BB1, it kind of left like a ring of foam around the perimeter of the glass. So moving on to the aroma, I took a whiff of this stuff, and it was just apple juice, plain and simple to me. It just smelled like I had opened up a bottle of Mott's apple juice, and that's what it was.
Yeah.
I didn't get much beer character coming through in the nose, so no real pronounced malt or hop presence in the aroma. And as I continued to smell it, I was trying to think of what type of apple it was that I was getting. And to me, it was, I'm thinking, is it red apple? Is it green apple? And it was a little bit more of a red apple, like a Macintosh type of a thing versus like a green Granny Smith or anything like that. So then, moving into the flavor, the initial taste, this was just a really interesting experience. This was something that was unlike anything I've really ever had before. And throughout the course of like taking a sip of it, there's just like this whole curve and spectrum of flavors that you pick up. And the initial flavor is very, very apple-y. I had written down that it was slightly tart and acidic, but that apple-y tartness dissipates very quickly and morphs into something that's a little bit more of a beer flavor. So it's a little bit more rounded and malty in flavor in the middle, with a little bit of hop bitterness coming through. And it has almost like a flatness or roundness. And what else did I say here? Which is in, I can't even read my handwriting. It's, exactly. At this point, after the BB1 and a few sips of the graph, my handwriting suffered.
Yeah, these guys sitting around the table, we did the BB1 and the graph all in one night, and I can see their chairs kind of wobbling back and forth at the table here. But go ahead.
totally understand. I think what I'm saying here is it's interesting because what happened initially, again, was just very tart and acidic with that initial burst, but it dissipated so quickly into this beery, rounded, flat type of flavor in the middle. And it was just, I don't know that I've ever had a beverage before that can change and do so many different things in just one sip. Overall impression, I will tell you, I'm not sure this was my favorite beverage. I think it may be a little bit more of an acquired taste. I mean, this was the very first graph that I've ever had. One of the things that I was really interested in to try this, and in previous episodes, you know, listening to, you know, JD and Chris, listening to the two of you describe this, I was really interested to know, is this going to be something that's a little bit closer to the cider side of things or closer to the beer side? And to me, it definitely leans more towards the cider side of things than beer side.
You got 4 gallons of cider and only 1 gallon of beer work, so
that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. There's more heavier on the cider ingredients. You know, I think also in terms of the body and mouthfeel, I think it had a very nice mouthfeel, a nice maltiness going on. I wanted a little bit more bite to it throughout the, you know, that initial bite that I got that dissipated so quickly. If there could be a way to prolong that, it might enhance it a little bit. And I was even wondering if you added in some acid to it, you know, a tartaric or citric or some type of acid, what effect that might have to help that initial burst of acidity kind of linger a little bit longer.
Well, you know, one way to do that would be to step down from the crystal 120 down to a lower, what was it, like a 60?
60 was the next one down, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe going from a 120 to a 60 would allow a little more of that bite to come through.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It was really just a fascinating experience, and I'm really grateful that you included that because, again, first time having a graph, didn't really know quite what to expect, and it was definitely enjoyable.
Well,
you guys are going to get a bottle of mine, and if you didn't like JD's, you're probably not going to like mine, but you're going to have a totally different experience with it because it's different, and that's really odd considering we used everything. We did everything the same.
Well, yours is,
we even
don't
use
forget,
the same brand apple juice.
Yeah, and don't forget, yours is a couple of months older than mine, and what we found out together over the course of time, and it begins almost immediately, is it changes drastically. Almost, it'd be a stretch, you know, saying that it changed weekly, but I would say that probably every 15 to 30 days, the damn thing changes flavors, and it goes from good to bad to really bad to you want to put in a spray bottle and clean your bathroom with to somewhat decent, somewhat good to better to, I mean, just it's amazing how it changes. So,
Yeah, I don't have like a totally different beverage. I mean, it's the same beverage.
Exactly.
There's no mistaking that it's the same thing, but it's just different. It's kind of like drinking a soda. You know, you drink a Dr. Pepper or a Coke. They're both obviously sodas. They're just different.
Yeah.
And
well,
that's kind of like this is.
Yeah, and Aaron, you hit the nail on the head. It's definitely a cider. It's got some beer qualities, but it is absolutely a cider. No mistaking about it.
100%.
Yeah, that's the category that I think Chris and I would both put it in, would be a cider. With just some oddball adjuncts, you know.
Exactly.
I want to hear from Ryan and Jeff. I had sent them a bottle. I thought I'd split things up here a little bit. So I sent two of you one thing and two of you something different. Jeff and Ryan got a bottle of this Vanilla Beans. Now, this stuff was put together, I believe, in January. I'm looking for my notes. I printed the damn things out. I believe it was January. And it was made, wildflower honey. Yes, this was put together on January 30th. Made with 20 pounds of wildflower honey. I used QA23 yeast. And it was just wildflower honey and water, fermented out, racked it onto, I think it was 8 vanilla beans. And I used, I like splitting my beans up. I don't remember if it was Madagascar or it could have even been Indonesian beans. Those are two of my favorite. And that's it. So, interested to, hear what you guys thought about that. Either one of you.
Jeff, go ahead.
Okay. So at your request, my wife also tried this. She thought it was a very light, easy drinking mead. She had, nothing bad to say about it. It reminded her a lot of a Pinot Grigio, essentially. I was a little bit more critical, a little bit more in depth with my results. Looking at the appearance of it, I got a light, kind of a straw gold, color with in my glass, it had a slight chill haze to it. And there weren't really legs to speak of. It sheeted off the glass instead of having legs. As far as the bouquet and aroma, I got a light honey sweetness, and there was a really that distinct vanilla sweetness that you always smell when you open up a can of like vanilla extract. That came through really nicely on this one. I thought as far as the flavor goes, that honey flavor, the sweetness of the honey, was really well enhanced by the vanilla. I also thought the vanilla was just slightly excessive. It almost had kind of a slight vegetal flavor, coming from the vanilla beans. It might have just been very, very slightly overdone. I don't know in quantity or in length. The body to me was very light. Like my wife said, it was very easy drinking. I thought it slightly bordered on watery, but I could still see this being an easy drinking light wine. It's a little bit lighter than my usual taste run, but that's not necessarily a bad thing at all. And then the aftertaste had a lot of nice warmth from the vanilla and the alcohol present in it. Overall, I thought it was a really nicely balanced mead. The vanilla complimented the honey nicely, and I would have bumped the body up just very slightly, but overall I thought it was pretty good.
Thank you.
Sure. Of course.
And Ryan.
Yeah, so kind of using the same format that we've used. This is me first of all. Andrea did try it as well. It was a straw colored. It was very clear. It had just very, very slight carbonation that might have just come from, it wasn't fully degassed. The aroma was extremely strong vanilla. I put Madagascar with a question mark. My guess, it smelled like I had just opened a jar of fresh Madagascar beans,
mm-hmm.
If you had said that it was a good chance that it could be Madagascar, and
yeah.
Since I wrote that down, let's go with that. Let's just pretend that's what you did. I also got a hint of chocolate on the nose. Moving down to flavor, I thought that it had what I call a medium mouthfeel. It didn't coat your mouth to the to an excessive amount, but it wasn't light at all. It told you that it was there. I was surprised by the acidity that was in it. You know, it if it tasted like it had smelled, it would have been, or smelled, it would have been difficult to drink much of it. But this acidity that was there was cutting the vanilla, and it ended up fairly well balanced. I wrote that it would make a nice after dinner drink. So I thought that the result was it was well.
Yeah.
Andrea gave me her results. Andrea said that it was, as she looked at it, she said it was also lightly carbonated. It was very light yellow. She said that on the nose, she got sharp vanilla and sugar. She said that on the taste, she was getting a lot of vanilla. And she said that she got some perceived chocolate in the taste. She said that it was nicely balanced. It was a little bit sweet, and it was pleasantly drinkable, and it was a nice sipper, is what she said.
Nice.
She also a nice sipper. Cool. She also said that she really liked the label. The label made her think that she wanted to be, and this is in quotes, she wanted to be in a lawn chair at the edge of a peninsula. And she thought that it made her think of paradise, but it was funny because she wouldn't picture bees in paradise, but that she can see how JD's paradise does have bees in it. So that the label worked well.
You know, I swear to God, she needs to hook up with my wife, because my wife goes up and down the beer and wine aisles, and she buys the stuff because the label looks nice, no matter what's in the bottle. So I guess I got a damn good mead if you judge it by the label. That's funny.
JD, when I make a mead, you know, I mean, I taste it along the way, but I try not to pass judgment until it's drop clear and de-gas. And then I try to make a final judgment on it. And they usually end up in one of three categories. The first would be, this is going down the drain. Category number two is, okay, this is good. I'm bottling this up and giving it away. People are going to drink this now. And the third category is, this is good. I'm bottling this up, and I'm going to stick it away, and nobody's going to know I got it for a year or two.
Yeah.
And tasting your blueberry sizer, if I were you, I don't know what you've done with the rest of it already. You may already have it bottled or whatever, but if I tasted that, at the stage it's at now, that would be one that I would get me some 375 bottles, some really good corks, and I would spend a few minutes making a nice label. I'd bottle that stuff up, cork it, wax it, and I would set it aside and forget about it for a year. Let that apple come through, and you would have something that in probably 2018, you could send it a Mazer cup and have one sitting on your mantle.
Well, I've got some bottles. I mean, it's all carbonated. I carbonated the whole entire batch, and it's bottled up. So I've got, I don't know how many bottles I got left of it, but enough that I can put away and save and everything. So.
Okay. Well, see, now my bottle was not carbonated. Was it supposed to be?
Really? Yeah, it was supposed to be carbonated. That's surprising.
Mine was perfectly still.
Really? Wow. Yeah. Ryan, was yours carbonated? Well, you had yours out here, right?
I did, and it was also, I mean, it was a gentle carbonation, if anything. I mean, it was extremely It was carbonated to the point that, you know, like your vanilla, it might to me, it just, it might have been, oh, it's carbonated in the sense that it's not degassed.
Yeah. You know,
it didn't seem like there was any extra carbonation in it.
Okay, this was perfectly still. There was no carbonation at all.
Okay, that's an interesting, okay, this is interesting because let me tell you how this works, okay? The blueberry, I don't have, before I bought my 3-gallon keg, I had no way of carbonating 2 gallons of blueberry cider, okay? I don't like the method of the sugar thing. I don't like that. So what I did was that, you remember the little gizmo we talked about that goes on the top of soda bottles? Well, what I, okay, I took that blueberry, I took some, I took, you know, however many bottles, what, 4 bottles worth, and put that amount in the soda bottle and put the little gizmo on top, hooked it up to my CO2, deal and just carbonated the crap out of it. And then I've got this little, DIY jury rigged little setup that I can actually bottle out of the soda bottle into beer bottle. And that's what I did. So, I put it in a beer bottle, threw a cap on it, and, they sat on the kitchen table until I got ready to send them out. So.
But mine had no carbonation, but I would not put any carbonation in it.
No? Interesting.
That to me is more of a wine-like style. Okay. That I would lose still.
Okay, so I don't even know what to expect out of the other bottles that I have sitting here. And then Aaron, you may wind up with the same thing when you get around to tasting yours. So interesting. Well, guys, what, you know, it's just been kind of a fun night. I appreciate the comments that everybody's given each other. For me, it's very personal because I get to know that, you know, if I'm doing the right thing, the bad thing, the wrong thing, or whatever, by your comments more so than any of my relatives or my neighbors. Personally, for me, I sincerely appreciate that. I don't know how the rest of you guys feel about it, but it's a very personal thing for me. The vanilla thing, I don't know that I would even do this. Not my thing. And I'm thinking back, Ryan, the Madagascar, this is why I'm thinking Madagascar, because there is a chocolate, if you sit and sniff vanilla beans all day, there's a bunch of them out there that even give off this chocolatey aroma at some point. So that may be where that chocolate's coming from. But I guarantee you, I had no chocolate in it other than a vanilla bean. I don't know that I would do that one again. I don't know how I could make it better. What, more, less vanilla beans? I mean, what else would you do to it? I don't know. But Aaron, my God, dude, I'm still looking for another 6-pack of this stuff around the house. This is amazing. It's just simply amazing.
That's awesome. Well, again, thanks to Jeff for the recipe and the methodology that I followed there. And, needless to say, I think that those hopped meads, that'll be a procedure that I will replicate and scale up from a 1 gallon to a 3 or 5 gallon for sure.
Well, and
so,
Aaron, send me your recipe for
Aaron,
the Chinook.
I will for sure.
Go ahead, Ryan.
I was going to say, I don't know if you got, are you out of those bottles or do you have any left?
I have 1 bottle of the Calypso left.
Okay. The reason I ask you is, you know, you need at least 2 to enter a contest, but the Wisconsin State Fair competition actually, I think, closes the middle of April. So I was going to tell you that if you had a few bottles, you know, left over, you know, those are competition worthy.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I that's something that I definitely want to get involved in, I think, in the future, is some competitions. And, I think part of that, to me, that's something I haven't done before. But with sharing these meads with, you know, with you guys and hearing your comments and your feedback, I mean, it's something that, like JD said, it is very personal, but it also, I think, helps me to understand what works and what doesn't work, and what might be appealing to different people and for what reasons. And I think the competition angle is something that would just kind of take me further down that path as well.
Amazing. Well, guys, we've pretty much reached the end of the our time here tonight. I tell you, just five guys sitting around the table talking about mead. No better way to spend a Tuesday night. We're glad those of you who are going to listen to the show as soon as we get done here are going to enjoy it too. Reminder, now this is show number 6, theoretically our last one, but I think what we're going to do is come together again next week. Now Chris won't be here. I'm sure we can find something to talk about. After that, I think we'll take our 2-week break, because I'll be off for those 2 weeks. I kind of goofed on the calendar when I was looking at it. So I know Ryan responded back. He's willing to show up next Tuesday night for a show. I think we can knock one out in a couple hours, find something to talk about. So we'll do 7 shows this time around. And then after next week, we'll be off for our regular 2-week hiatus, come back after that. So, with that, I'll see you guys next week.